Welcome to Aggressive Life. Just in time for Christmas, here's a little extra gift from me to you. From wah to wah, whatever. We got a double feature lined up for the podcast. That's right. One day, two different episodes, all about our favorite topic around Christmas. Die Hard. Yes. First, you're going to find an interview with Elizabeth Lane. She's a former Hollywood director of development who actually helped bring one of my favorite Christmas movies to life, Die Hard. And she actually, I want to spoil this for her, she's actually not in alignment that it actually is a Christmas movie. I don't like having guests who don't get with the freaking program, but nonetheless, she was a great guest, appreciate her. But in case you want to know why Die Hard actually is a Christmas movie and you want a little bit of a spiritual jolt to your season, I'm also including a message I gave on this topic. And man, it's one of the most favorite things I've ever done when I've preached. I love doing things that tend not to be done. Preaching on Die Hard generally isn't done. Also, wearing makeup like makes it look like you were beaten up generally isn't done. Also, wearing a wife beater, having to put a jacket on afterwards generally isn't done. And for the grand finale, or actually the grand intro, actually smoking a cigarette on stage a la John McClane style. God bless America. Welcome to the party, pal. It was really, really good. I had a lot of fun with it. Aggressive fun. Whatever episode you have queued up, let's get on to it. And you can find the other one right in your podcast feed when this one ends. Yippee-ki-yay, Merry Christmas. Welcome to a special Christmas edition of The Aggressive Life, all about the greatest Christmas movie ever made. You might be thinking, Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart, it kind of talks like that. No, we're not talking about Jimmy Stewart or You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. No, we're not talking about The Grinch or Home Alone or Christmas Vacation. No, today is about Die Hard. Yeah, Die Hard. And we have a diehard insider to talk us through the 1988 cult classic, a movie that redesigned the entire action movie genre, gave us infinitely quotable lines, and an average Joe action hero in John McClane that audiences could relate to. We're getting into that and much more with a woman who helped make Die Hard possible, Elizabeth Lane. As a young woman, she moved to Los Angeles and she broke into the film industry as a reader and someone who works through massive volumes of scripts submitted to producers looking for ones that could be greenlit into feature films. And from there, she became the director of development for Largo Entertainment, a production company created by Larry Gordon that had made such iconic action films as Predator and 48 Hours. Derek, this can be hard for me.
I'm not to stay focused.
I want to stay on Die Hard, but my gosh,
it's so many good movies.
Jeez, no kidding. As the director of development, she was part of the entire process for Die Hard, from development to filming to release. She's taking us back there. She says she's dusted off the old files. She's sharpened her memory files. Was Die Hard a Christmas movie? Of course it is. Welcome to the Aggressive Life, all the way from L.A., Elizabeth Lane.
Are we going to debate that Christmas question right off the bat?
Well, should we? So you differ, you disagree?
I think that the audience can decide for itself. If it's a Christmas movie to you, then I guess it's a Christmas movie. What I can tell you, though, is it never was intended to be.
Hey, don't impinge on my truth. This is my truth, okay?
Okay.
I'm entitled to my truth.
But I think that's what I said. You get to pick. If it's Christmas for you, I don't know. It's a little violent for me for Christmas, and we wouldn't have released it in July had we intended it to be a Christmas movie.
Hey, don't give me data and facts, Elizabeth. I'm not. I'm here to buttress my own opinions. I don't need you bringing me your cold water of reality.
Well, I will say you are not alone in your Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie ever made.
Well, I think it's Christmas. Yeah.
But it took us by surprise.
Oh, it did. Tell me about that.
It did. Well, just because Fox wanted a summer blockbuster. We released it in July. We had no thought that it would become a Christmas classic. So that's my counter to the Christmas argument. But again, if it's a Christmas movie for you, then who am I to say?
Well, that's all right. I mean, my data points are pretty simple. One, people think it's a Christmas movie, so Elizabeth, take that and just enjoy that reality. People say it's Christmas story. That's a lot of truth out there, Elizabeth. A lot of truth out there.
I give.
Two, there's a Christmas tree in the movie. You put a Christmas tree in the movie. Why would you put a Christmas tree in the movie if it wasn't a Christmas movie?
You've never seen a movie with Christmas in the background that had nothing to do with Christmas?
Nothing had nothing to do with Christmas. No. No. Have you ever seen a Halloween movie that had a Halloween background that had nothing to do with Halloween? No.
Yes,
no,
I've seen movies with Halloween scenes. Look, I agree with you. I give. I can just tell you that it really did take us by surprise because we did not intend it to be a Christmas movie.
that's funny. I just love
it. As they are not usually violent and aggressive.
You go. Okay, there you go. Well, that's reason number two for why I say it's a Christmas movie, because, you know, as a follower of Christ, Jesus died a violent death, and actually he was born a violent birth. He's freaking born in a cave. He's placed inside of a cereal feeding bowl, which is what a stable was. They got swaddling cloths wrapped around him because his parents couldn't afford an actual blanket. So they took what the swaddling cloths were, strips of cloth they would wrap around lamb's feet that were in the fields that were going to go to the sacrificial system, so they never actually walked on dirt. So, like, Christmas is to me a really, really gritty scene. And Die Hard is really, really gritty. That's why it kind of resonates with me at that. But now you're right on all you say in terms of musically, but spiritually, I think the message is in there. Tell me when you go back, before you talk about the Christmas aspect, tell me what you remember about the filming of the movie. Like, you could finish the sentence. You would be surprised to know when filming that movie blank.
That's never ending.
Oh, good. Well, go ahead.
Off the top of my head, you'd be surprised to know that nobody at the studio wanted Bruce Willis.
Huh.
It was a big fight and a controversial choice. You'd be surprised to know that we didn't know the ending when we started shooting.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's often the case. They were writing on the set, trying to engineer a scene where bad guy number one confronts Bruce Willis, but it was hard to make that work within the structure of the movie, which is why he pretends to be a hostage, so they can have that one moment. I think the biggest thing, though, really was that nobody had high hopes for the movie at the studio or in town, and nobody wanted Bruce Willis, and we made everybody mad because we paid him an unprecedented amount of money at the time, and he was a TV star. So we just took a flyer.
Who was?
And it paid off.
It did. Who else was in the running?
Well, everybody in Hollywood. Originally, they wanted my boss, Larry Gordon, big action maven, had made Predator and 48 Hours. He wanted. I mean, first they would go out to Schwarzenegger. They went to him for everything, and Stallone, and then the big A-list stars like Harrison Ford. Everybody saw it.
Right.
In the end, it was a happy coincidence, because what makes that movie is that it isn't Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
It's not Stallone. It's you. It's a guy. He's a cop. He's a tough guy. But he's every man. And so that's why you like rooting for him and watching him use his ingenuity, you know. So it worked in our favor. But you would be surprised to know that nobody wanted him.
Yeah, I think that's part of why I resonate with the, if not the Christmas theme, just call it the redemption theme. And this is a guy who starts off, he's just basically a jerk, you know. He doesn't like L.A. He's saying hurtful things to his wife. He's a bruised and battered guy on the backside of a divorce, which is very, very common. But he's acting out, and somewhere along there, it switches. And he actually starts, you know, fighting for his wife. He starts laying his own life down. And I think that sort of theme is one of the reasons why I like to, I don't know, see it as a Christmas movie, or at least see it with a more spiritual lens. I like that.
Well, I do think there's a spiritual aspect, and it's definitely redemptive for him, that journey That, no question. We wanted it to be that. He changes.
Yeah.
Anytime your journey, your hero can go on a journey and change. And really, the novel was so different. Jeb Stuart, the first writer, that's how he first cracked the script, was to think about it in terms of he and his wife, that he needs to go back there to L.A., where he hates, and make things right with his wife.
Yeah.
And so when he took it from that pivotal relationship and that journey, then it made the movie. In the book, he's 65. It's his daughter, not his wife. She's a big drug addict. It's very dark, sort of 70s story, right? But it was Reagan America, and that's the tone of the movie, I think.
I didn't know that it was
a book.
But
I'm glad that's what you respond to. Yeah, it was called Nothing Lasts Forever. A guy called Roderick Thorpe wrote it. I think it was bought in like 79, maybe. So it took that long. It was kind of a languishing at the studio when we discovered it and put Jeb Stuart on it.
So when you were first introduced the project, Elizabeth, you obviously must not have thought that this was going to be an enduring classic like it is. Why do you think it is? Why does it live on and people still talk about it? And just like to joke with each other and debate whether it was a Christmas movie. We don't do that with other movies. If this one has a hold on our life. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a few things. Some of it is just mind-blowingly good action. John McTiernan directed it. He'd done Predator. He's a great action director. I remember talking to someone who'd seen Willis before the movie opened, had seen Willis on, I guess it would have been Johnny Carson back then, and they showed the fire hose sequence.
Yeah.
And my friend called me up and he said, I am so there, and I did not want to see this movie. I had no interest in, you know. So that's first and foremost. It's just great action. It also hit all the buttons at the time, which are amazingly relevant still. You know, everybody afraid of the foreign influence, and the Japanese are gobbling up everything, and the car, and you know, it hits a lot of buttons. And Willis is great. Everybody's good. I think also Alan Rickman is a huge part of why the movie works. One of the great movie villains. And he kind of pioneered that really smart, really slick, really just the everything he does with the role. I've always thought he had a lot to do with why it worked.
Yeah, he is fantastic. What was the initial reaction to Die Hard? Was it one of those ones that just built over time? I don't remember. Or was like the first weekend really promising with ticket sales?
It built a little bit. I'd have to go back and find my notes to know how it opened. It did not. It wasn't critically well received until somewhat later. But the audiences loved it.
Yeah.
I remember Tom Sherrick, who was a head of marketing and sales at Fox at the time, had been to one of the early test screenings and reported back to us that people were so into the movie that if they had to go to the bathroom, they were literally walking backwards up the aisle so as not to miss a second of the movie. That's when we knew we have a hit movie.
Yeah, that or they start peeing in the popcorn tub.
Yeah.
That does it too.
Not willing to get up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a good bit of backlash, right? Misogyny. People thought it was a critique against Reagan at the time. I mean, how much of this stuff that we as the American public, how much of this stuff is just our own insecurities and always looking for some hidden agenda to get us mad? And how much of these things sometimes are subliminally written in the script?
It's a very good question. Audiences didn't care, didn't read it that way, just got involved. Critics, it's anti-feminist, it's anti-foreign influence, it was one thing after another like that.
An anti-woman, why? Because Bruce Willis is trying to help his wife? I mean, she's not the only one that needs help. All the guys there need help. Why is it anti-woman?
No. No, because they have separated because she has put her career first. Yeah. I'm not giving you my opinion. I'm saying
but
this,
the movie
this,
didn't
this
criticize
this is what
that.
Was voices on.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. But it was seen as critical of a woman working. She drops her maiden name because the Japanese wouldn't understand. So we weren't thinking any of those things. We were just making a kick-ass action.
Right. You're having fun. What are some of the pivotal aggressive moves that you made in that movie? So one of them would be paying Bruce Willis a lot of money. What other ones were just really hard decisions that you went after or risky things that you chose to do?
I would have to say it was Willis because there was so much writing on him. He wasn't a movie star. Hmm. You know, when you go in thinking, okay, we're going to get Schwarzenegger or Stallone or Harrison Ford, or and you end up with Bruce Willis, the guy from Moonlighting, everybody was not on board. In fact, if you look at the evolution of the one sheets, the movie posters, the very first one is just the building. Hmm. I wish I had a picture of him. The next one is like half of Willis's face in the building until finally the third poster that came along, because they keep evolving, is Bruce Willis. And that's kind of like the story of the movie.
Yeah. Having Stallone or Schwarzenegger would have been horrible in that movie. Horrible. Because you expect that they're going to carry the day because you've seen them carry the day so many times in every movie they're in, just psychologically, subliminally, you know it's going to happen. But, you know, when he's there, he's just the wisecracking guy from Moonlighting. He didn't have this idea of just being a stud. I mean, he started putting on muscle and working out, you know, years later. And he looked half decent. But, yeah, this guy was that's what made that so compelling. He was just a normal guy cop.
It's not the same movie without that. That's why it was just serendipitous that we couldn't get anyone else, because it makes the movie work.
Yep. Was there a lesson, looking back on that, with your involvement in that project, was there a lesson to how that film came out that influenced the rest of your career?
William Goldman, a famous screenwriter, wrote a book about the business years ago, and a line became indelible for people who'd read it. Nobody knows nothing. And that's the nature of the movie business. Nobody knows nothing. They were sure that Willis was the wrong guy, that, you know, I've always lived by that. You know what? I believe in the strength of the script. Hmm. I'm married to a writer, so I'm prejudiced, and that's what I did. I worked with writers, but I don't think you ever get past the blueprint of a great screenplay.
Right.
And I feel like we have one.
Yep, you did, for sure. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should be at least simple. That's why for the last 2 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions, at home, on a hunting trip, camping off my motorcycle, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to get moving. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. I like to have it in the morning. I have a 12 ounce of water, so right off the bat, I'm helping my hydration every single morning. This is the one product, if I had to recommend one, I'd recommend this one to elevate your health. It's AG1, and that's why I partnered with them for 2 years. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/aggressivelife. That's drinkag1.com/aggressivelife. Get yourself some. Elizabeth, I think I'm going to take you the lightning round. That's what I think. The lightning rounds, when I ask
you... Okay, that scares me.
Well, let me describe it, and then maybe it won't scare you. Are you afraid of lightning?
No.
No, you probably live in L.A. You've never seen lightning in your life, probably.
Very rarely. Well, look, I was born and raised in Kentucky.
Where are you? Where in Kentucky?
Yes, Louisville.
Louisville. I know that because you even just said it. You said it properly.
I said it right.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so here it is. I give you a topic, and you answer it fast as lightning, like a one sentence or two sentence answer. We're in and out on each topic. Are you up for the lightning round, Elizabeth Lane, maiden of Die Hard? Are you up for it?
I am.
Okay.
She said with not a lot of...
I know, with not a lot of conviction. You're not an actor. That's right. You're more on the producing end. That's okay. That's okay. Here we go. Finish this sentence. When I think of Die Hard, I think of...
You know what? Every time I think of Die Hard, I think of the premiere because it was my first big old-fashioned movie premiere. And they don't really do them so much anymore, but it was one of the big ones in the old day. And I was like, oh, I really am in Hollywood. Because I'd been spending my days toiling in a room with writers. That's actually the first thing that comes to mind.
Love it. Favorite scene?
Huh. I mean, I love the firehouse. I love the glass. I think it would have to be where Gruber pretends to be a hostage, just because I love Alan Rickman. I think he's a great actor.
Yeah, that is a good one. Favorite thing about how Bruce Willis acted?
I think he managed to bring this charm to it in the middle of the action and this kind of vulnerability. That you don't see that in action heroes. You really don't. And he doesn't know what am I doing? What's going on? You know, and mind you, he has a tough job because he has to talk to himself a lot in the movie because there's no one with him. Yeah, that was was a big part of the rewrite that D'Souza did because he was known as a comedy and action guy, and he came up with a yippee-ki-yay. Kaye and, you know, the wisecracky stuff because he has to keep talking to himself because the audience is sitting there and there's no dialogue.
Well, that probably is the answer to the next one. Your favorite line from the movie?
Wow, you're really catching my should have rewatched it.
No.
I like Yippee-ki-yay because the audience loved it.
Yippee-ki-yay, Merry Christmas. Yes, for sure. I think that's how that line goes, right? Yippee-ki-yay, Merry Christmas.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I was careful.
Yeah, 100%.
I was careful.
Do you have any...
Because it's married to his whole, he's a cowboy, the cowboy imagery, the lone American hero cowboy thing. And then D'Souza turns it on its ear with a fun piece of dialogue. That's why I like it.
Favorite behind the scenes moment?
One of my favorite behind the scenes moment was what I already told you and Tom Sherry reported back from the first test screening. Because, you know, you're in the dark with the movie. You've been rolled up your sleeves and you've been working on it in a vacuum for so long. Once you put it out there, like your kid, you know, into the world and wait for a response, there is nothing like sitting with an audience and seeing that response. There's nothing like it. When they laugh, when they jump, when they, you know.
Yes.
So hearing, and I went to subsequent test screenings and they were all great because people went crazy for it.
Favorite thing about Alan Rickman's portrayal of Hans Gruber?
Oh, I just think it's so smart and it's so... He doesn't ever go over the top and start twirling his mustache and being a villain. He's the smartest guy in the room and he's funny. I think he's great. I think he helps make the movie.
So last question. Will you watch Die Hard this Christmas season?
In honor of you and my brother and your podcast, I hereby promise to watch it.
I like it.
Do you have any idea how many times I've seen Die Hard?
No, I'm curious. How many?
I couldn't tell you.
I've probably only watched it. I don't like to watch movies twice because I know the ending. But I probably only watched Die Hard maybe two times, maybe a time and a half. I'm going to watch it again this week because I'm preaching on it at my day job in 10 days. So I'm
okay. Am I allowed to ask you?
Of course you can. Yes.
What do you preach on? How do you use Die Hard in a sermon?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, great question. So we've done a series the last 3 years, Christmas at the Movies. Let's explore these Christmas movies and why they endure. And the reason why great art moves us is because whether people believe it or not, great art that moves us always has the story of God in it. Even if they're ignoring the story of God, or the writers were not writing for the story of God, the things that move us are the characteristics and the qualities of God, the things that are the timeless stories in the Bible. That's why they move us. They're tapping into the story of God. So, example, we did The Grinch. The Grinch is Stole Christmas. We all have a small heart. A heart that has been pounded small by the cynicism of our world, and we become people who don't feel things and don't embrace things, and God has to break through and expand our heart. That's why the Grinch is so mesmerizing to us. Elf. The reason why Elf is so powerful in a Christmas movie is because all of us feel like spiritual orphans. We feel like we're forgotten. We feel like there isn't a higher father figure that's protecting us and is for us. We feel like we're in an orphanage where we're having to compete for oatmeal, where when you have something good that happens to you, I don't get it. And so I feel slighted. It's why we're constantly comparing and contrasting. We all have to have Pharisees all the time because we're acting like spiritual orphans. And so that's why Elf is so powerful, is because it speaks against the orphan heart. Jesus himself is in essence an orphan. He's got God the Father, who puts him in Mary's belly, and Joseph adopts him, and he has this ding against him his whole time. The Pharisees would call him a bastard. They say, "At least we know who our father is." And he would get hurt by it. He said, "Well, I know who my father isn't. Your father's the devil. That's who your father is." That's a quote. I mean, they would poke at him on this. So that's that one. So that's why I say with Die Hard, the reason why I put it in a Christmas movie, and the reason I'll talk about it, is it's the cry of the human heart. Something's being taken from me. I need to fight for my family. No one believes in me. It happens over Christmas, and God fights for us. Jesus comes and he fights for us. He fights for us for dying on a cross. So that's how it's gonna be played out on Christmas, and why all the great Christmas stories, they all, whether they believe, know it or not, they all have the Bible story in them.
Well, I'm going to have to share that with the producer of the movie because I think it would take him by surprise.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Bible says that we're created in the image of God. So whether we believe in God or know God at all, we all have these internal drives, internal understanding of right and wrong, and internal understanding of beauty that affects people. And these themes that we see in these Christmas movies are, you know, just they're in the Bible, so it's easy to preach from, and it's fun, you know.
It is fun. Is it Christmas movies?
It's new ones every Christmas. So this is the third year we've done it. So it's a 4-week series. So after this year, we'll have to say, okay, are we getting kind of to the end? There's not
that. We've covered all the Christmas movies.
We've not covered all of them, but some of them just, I don't know, they're not compelling. You know, I wanted to do White Christmas, and I watched it last year. I was like, this movie.
Too creaky.
I don't know. It just, you don't get the feels with it. I don't anyway. It's nice. It's traditional, but I don't know. There wasn't anything compelling there. Do you agree? Have you seen White Christmas?
Well, not for years, but it's pretty creaky and old.
Yeah.
I can't, hard to be relevant for a modern audience.
Right, but what?
I mean, that's the thing about Die Hard. It, all those thematic threads, they're still relevant.
Right.
It's not Reagan America, but people still have the concerns about foreign takeover of the country or, you know, all of those things. They're kind of universal.
Well, It's a Wonderful Life is also old and creaky, but it's still compelling.
Oh, but it always works.
I know it does.
Because that is one of the most spiritual movies Hollywood ever made.
100%.
Which is why it is so lasting.
Right, exactly right.
That would be first on my list of Christmas movies to preach on.
It was.
If I were inclined to preach.
It was first on my list. That was the first message we gave of the very first Christmas series. I did that one, and that is one movie that I've seen many, 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 many times. It's just a heartwarming thing.
Yeah, every year,
you know?
Right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I watch it every year.
Do you really?
But now I'm going to watch Die Hard instead.
Yeah.
Now that I know it's a Christmas movie.
Now that you know the hidden spiritual meaning of Elizabeth, there's a Christmas tree. There's a guy trying to save people. That's Jesus. There's a guy who does things to lay down his life. That's Jesus.
I'll do you one better.
Yeah.
His wife's name is Holly.
Oh, my goodness. Christmas Holly.
Holly.
Yes, Holly, yeah. Which is related to holy. He's the holy one sent by God, Elizabeth. How is your heart so hard?
Or Christmas Holly. Yes, yes.
Elizabeth, is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we haven't talked about? Any question you wanted me to ask that I didn't ask you?
No, I was shocked that you would want to talk to me about Die Hard. So, but I think we talked about most of it.
Next time we'll talk about Predator, because that's another one. That is just...
Whew. Oh, are you a Predator fan?
Oh, my gosh. Am I a red-blooded American? Yes, I'm a Predator fan.
That was my boss, Action Icon.
That movie was another one.
I was lucky because as a woman in my first job in the business, I already liked action movies. I liked the old ones, like John Wayne. I liked all the Wild Bunch. It wasn't that hard for me to go to work on action movies.
Do you have any movies you're working on right now?
No, because I'm basically retired.
Oh, you are.
I'm trying to write a little. I give my husband story notes when he's working.
There you go. Well, Elizabeth, it's been fantastic having you with us. Thank you for being so generous with your time. If you've got any projects or you want to build your following on social media, if you've got anything of that, you can go ahead and advertise yourself. Point us any direction you want us to go.
Brian, I have zero social media profile. I'm anti-social media. So
Elizabeth,
I have nothing to sell.
Elizabeth.
I think it's the source of a lot of bad in the world.
It is.
I've chosen to opt out except for your show.
Oh, my gosh, Elizabeth.
See how honored you should be?
Yeah, see, you started with one foot in the bucket when you didn't see the light of Die Hard being a Christmas movie. And now I actually see how enlightened you are to understand how harmful social
media is. Well, you have won me over to your cause. Note that I did start by saying if it's a Christmas movie to you, then
you did.
It's a Christmas movie to you.
You did. You stayed with your enlightened ideals and gave me room to run. I appreciate that.
It's been a pleasure. I hope I answered some question in some way that you found amusing. Otherwise, but I've really enjoyed meeting you and doing this.
Well, I appreciate the time, Elizabeth. You did great. You gave me some things and all of our listeners some stuff to know about that movie that we didn't know any other way, and because you were generous with the time. So thanks, Elizabeth. Hey, if you heard something from Elizabeth that's relevant for you, you probably have. I don't know what it is. Something about how difficult things are to work behind the scenes. Something about maybe there's somebody you need to believe in that people aren't believing in, like they thought of John McClane having Bruce Willis there. I don't know. This might not be just an information session for you, but maybe there's something you want to put in practice your life. Why don't you do that? Be aggressive. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life.
Take care, Ryan.
Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at briantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks of a Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to dirt@briantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram @BrianTome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.